Welcome to What Comes Next Live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm really passionate about what I call open leadership and write about it daily on my website, tommccallum.com.
So we're live. Welcome to What
Comes Next Live. Now I really screwed something up.
I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm really passionate about what I call open leadership and write about it daily on
I am having a technical glitch here, okay?
So we're live. Welcome to What Comes Next.
Now I really screwed something up.
I'm Tom McCallum. Really passionate about open leadership and write about it daily
on I am having a technical glitch here, okay? What's going on? This has never happened to any of the shows. I don't know what I've done. Okay. Oh, it's still going. Great. I've got real problems. Hang on. Let's see what happens.
This has never happened to any of the shows. I don't know what I've done.
I think this is hilarious.
This is great.
Oh, it's still going. Great. I've got real problems. Hang on. Let's see what happens. Shows.
Excellent. Steve Chapman would love this.
I think this is hilarious.
You've got a time delay and an echo. I have no idea. Unless you've got the YouTube window open in the background.
Steve Chapman would love this.
I think this is hilarious. All my fault, as usual. Everything is always my fault.
I was completely confused. I was going, what's going on there? Well, it shouldn't be playing. We actually had the show on, so it started playing with a time delay. Okay. Well, we are still streaming, it would appear. But the first 47 seconds, we conspired to have a really confusing time delay. So I'll try the intro again. That was certainly real. No need for more intro. We've just had a technical glitch, thanks to courtesy of between Kay and myself. We're both sitting here in unusual conditions. It must be, we got all the swearing out the way before we started about how hot it was. It's incredibly hot, but we're pretending to be cool. And in any case, I am really happy to have my dear friend Kay Scorer on to talk to me about what comes next. Joining an illustrious cast of past guests, and will raise the bar in her own inimitable way. So, Kay, tell us a little bit about Kay.
I love that we started out with chaos, because chaos is my name. And I also love a little bit about Kay, because like Steve, I think when you interviewed Steve, he said, I'm 47, I thought by now I should have, you know, the elevator pitch down, and it just gets longer. And I'm about to be 66, and I'm the same. It just gets longer. My favorite description of me, I guess, is the witch of noticing. So, and I think that came from Jeff Hanoi, who you know from Modern Elder Academy. And when I think back on my life, noticing is what I've been good at. Mm-hmm. I think that comes from a number of things. First of all, when you are the little skinny one in the playground, you have to get really good at seeing where the bully is coming from. So I think my noticing skills came partly from that. And also from being brought up in a family with, my dad was a carpenter, very good at noticing things, the texture of things, the feel of things. So I'm a noticer, I'm a professional noticer. But in terms of the resume, if you like, first of all, I wanted to be in the circus, then I wanted to be a dancer, then I wanted to be Charles Dickens. And then everyone said, oh, you're a clever girl, you should do science. So I did biochemistry at university. I worked at the Max Planck Institute in Frankfurt. And I've only just realized, Tom, I'm actually wearing the Max Planck t-shirt. So did that, didn't really see myself taking that any further, so moved into advertising, as you do, biochemistry advertising. Did awfully well at that. Then set up my own business about 35 years ago, specializing in cross-cultural communications. And yeah, I aim to get people to listen to each other, to understand each other, to express themselves more concisely. Now that I've said that, I should probably shut up. I'm not being very concise.
That's express themselves more concisely. With which I now start to think to myself, anything I say now is going to be less than concise.
I should have added that I am an evil witch, and yes, these things do happen around me. I think, you know, the other thing I should say is that throughout my career in science and business, I've always kept up with the expressive side of me. Mm-hmm. So I went to dance class when I was at university and continued to do that all my life. When I lived in California for a while, I went to acting school. I studied a Japanese dance form called Buto, which is all about expressing your nature through your body. And I also happen to have a diploma in yoga therapy, which is all about using your body to help you feel better.
So I've just been studying, I say studying, I've been really looking into a guy who was a chess prodigy 30 odd years ago called Josh Waitzkin in America. Uh-huh. And he was the subject of the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer. And he was interviewed by Tim Ferriss, and Tim Ferriss is an expert about getting 80% good at anything in 4 hours. All right. So a lot of people watching this, listening to this later will have heard of Tim Ferriss, and he does a regular podcast. A really fascinating guy. But Josh Waitzkin he wrote a book called The Art of Learning. He takes it from a completely different angle. And he says he helps people with their last 1%, what they need to go from truly elite to world class. And it kind of resonates with people I love to work with. And I was going, well, what's his take on all of this? Because he has been world champion or world class at push hands Tai Chi, at chess, and at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right? Very, very different disciplines. And there's a phrase, there was a tip that I wrote into tomorrow's blog about, he's suggesting people don't check your email when you finish a break. Like Hemingway used to finish his day's writing in the middle of a sentence and put it down, go take a complete break, and in the morning pick up where he was. And there's some, what Josh is talking about is that we are very reactive in the modern world. And there's some language he had, I'll try to capture it. He says we listen too much to the external noise and not enough to the internal music. And fundamentally what he was saying was that the difference between, however we categorize it, between being good to great, great to world class to truly elite, is about expressing your inner self. And if I take what you said about you are absolutely an amazing noticer. I learned from you a lot in noticing. And you talk about self-expression and the many ways in which you do that. I encourage people to check your LinkedIn feed on your exercise for the over 60s lately, which was totally brilliant self-expression. It was so you. And what I would also notice is that since I've known you the last couple of years, you are expressing your, a friend of mine on a call was talking about Josh, and what he said was he knows Josh's family, and he said, look, the thing about him is he doesn't attach to his identity.
Nice.
So all the labels we have, you talk about cross-cultural communication, all the labels we have, and I know this has been a big part of your expression of self of late, is the labels that people attach to you, used to attach to yourself. And now I would just put it, this is Kay, she lives out loud. So what do you notice about yourself?
Well, that's very perceptive of you, as always. And that is my doorbell. We are absolutely fated.
That's okay.
But I'm not going to answer it. I'm going to keep on talking to you. I recently discovered the concept of moral injury, and I'm not sure if you've come across that.
No, tell me.
it's something that's very common in people with PTSD, and it's very common in people who are trying to have a conversation but listening to the doorbell going.
Well, typically I find delivery people tend to go three times and give up.
We're two in.
Moral injury, people with PTSD.
Yeah. This is what happens when your actions contradict your values. So when you find yourself, and you can imagine how this might be in the military, for example, mm-hmm. you've grown up thinking, I mustn't hurt people, and you find yourself in the military. And I'm going to be really honest here. I experienced a lot of moral injury. The time in my life when I was making the most money, the busiest, the most glamorous time, was actually when I was selling people washing powder and cosmetics that they didn't need. I was doing a lot of work with, you know, big multinational corporates. And it was totally against my family values. I grew up in a family that was all about, you know, you don't need stuff, be good to everyone, equality is everything. And I had walked away from that for a very long time. And yes, as you observe, in the last few years, I've just gone, enough of this injuring myself morally. I will come back to being me. And one of the things that helped me do this enormously, and this is also about being yourself, is I never really learn anything until I teach it to someone else. And I have been so honored to do quite a bit of work with a charity called Teenage Cancer Trust over the years. And what I do with them is I run small workshops with young people who are going through cancer treatment or have come through it. I do talks at some of their events. And I did a talk about you're still you. Even if your cancer means that you've had an amputation, you're disfigured, you're infertile, you are still you. And I've got goosebumps telling you this story. I'm standing on stage talking about this and I started to cry. And I realized I was talking about myself. That in spite of the fact I had done a load of work over the years I didn't really approve of, I could still love me. I still approved of me. And there I was on stage doing something that I really was proud of. And that was a really real turning point for me. So super grateful to all those wonderful young people and of course the staff at Teenage Cancer Trust. And then out of that also, and you came to it, I started the conference Turning the Tables last year where I got young people who've had cancer, I got a young refugee, transgender person, to come up on stage and tell those of us who are experts about what they'd learned from the traumas that they'd gone through. And again, you know, I spent months putting that thing together. I learned so much from those young people. It was amazing. And I'm hoping to do it again. And it's those things that have allowed me recently to let my comedian out. So the LinkedIn things you referred to, you know, my not entirely serious exercise routines for the over 65s and my stand-up comedy. I want people to have more joy. Mm-hmm. And I'm allowing myself to do that now. Just one more thing on that. I think, is today the anniversary of Robin Williams' death? Yes. Because he famously said, you know, that the reason that anxious, depressed people make good comics is we don't want anyone else to suffer what we are suffering.
Wow.
So, you know, I went through a great deal of anxiety in my life. I don't want anyone to feel like that. I want people to laugh and smile and find joy in tiny, silly things.
Oh, that's really cool. There's, I want to talk about the bit about never really learn anything until I teach it to someone else, but I'll share the thing about joy and, be quite personal here is, I'm dating in my mid 50s again, having got divorced a few years ago. And my, well, not dating, my partner is a similar age. She'll remind me she's a few years younger. One of the beauties about having adult children, and I've noticing is that, and it's one of the things I kind of work with clients on in coaching, is being present. And it's about the journey, not the destination. You're nowhere near as goal-oriented. I think it's a beautiful modern elder U-curve of happiness thing, as Chip Conley often refers to. Mm-hmm. We're both in link to the Modern Elder Academy. Is that if you can be in the moment more, it's very powerful. And last night, I got a phone call saying that a rat had got into the house. And I'm kind of a country boy at heart. You know, I live in the city right now. And I went, well, just do this, this, and this by text message. Then the phone rings and goes, that's not going to work. And I can't get a pest control person to come till tomorrow. And I said, do you want me to drive down there? It's not a short drive. And I said, would you? And I just thought the whole thing was hilarious. So I just jumped in the car, drove down there. 5 minutes later, and sorted it all out. And I just thought, at the end of it all, there were a bunch of us around. We all just laughed at the situation and the ridiculousness and the hilarity of it, and just took joy and humor in the moment.
Absolutely.
And there's different stages of life and different viewpoints people will have, and they would just go, they would be all upset and they'd be blaming each other and you did this, you did that. And it was just, we just had a hilarious reflection on it, which is also a moment of just coming down from it, because one or two of them were actually quite shocked by it. And I went, mate, you've got PTSD from a rat. It's like, I just had a laugh about it. So yeah, I was really, really moved being at the Tabernacle for the Turning the Tables conference by all of the speakers. And I have to say to you, the person who moved me the most was you in your closing, right? And just you being you. And the whole day was a goosebump moment. And it was just that moment of presence going, is that difference between happiness and joy, right? I mean, happiness is, to me, it's kind of fleeting, and it can be in a laugh, and comedy can bring you that. And I hope that Bill Murray stays open in Islington, in that little gem around the corner from you in Islington, the comedy club. But joy is just deeper.
Yes.
So just reflecting and having a bit of a laugh. That's a really key insight I think you've got about, I never really learn anything until I teach it to someone else. And I found myself doing more and more. Yes, I work as a coach. That's my profession. I do so much mentoring, formal and informal. And you know, one of my mentees is literally 30 years younger than me, and was a college flatmate of my oldest son. Yeah. And, but he's a mate now, and we go on bike rides and we have beers. One of the interesting things, I just learned so much from him, you know? And I have mentees and mentors, so many of them, and it just has a real richness. Where I first realized that is when I was a really good squash player. And I mean, you know, genuinely really pretty good around my late 20s. And our club started a junior program, and I thought, well, I'll volunteer and help. I had to remember, you might be familiar with the idea of the competence model. Mm-hmm. Model. I had to remember how to play squash in order to teach it. Right. But if you told me how to move my feet and move and how to swing a racket and how to grip the racket, I couldn't remember that. That was so many years before I was, you know, that level of unconscious competence. And I got so much better. My national ranking moved from this level to right towards the very top. And I realized the only thing I changed in everything I did around the sport was to teach other people.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's just, some reflections.
I had an experience about exactly this thing yesterday. I was talking to my friend Lizzie Palmer, who also knows a lot of the people that we know. And I had been using a model with my clients for some time. Anyone who's ever worked with me laughs about this, because all the models I love have got 3 points. I love triangles. It's my favorite shape. And it was the opportunity, capability, motivation triangle. And I've been trotting this out so expertly for so many years with clients. And we would go, you know, if they were struggling with whether or not to do something, we would talk about, well, do we have capability in the company, or can we get the capability in? is this a good window of opportunity to do this? When should we be doing it? Is this the right opportunity? And then the third one is motivation. Do we really want to do this? Does this match our purpose and our values? And I'm talking a client through this the other day, and I had to cut the meeting short because I suddenly realized that I didn't have the motivation to work with them. So I said, you know what, guys, I just want to write this all down for you and I'll come back to you. And it was, you probably had this a lot as well, Tom. A lot of clients are saying to me, can we just throw that stuff up online? You know, all that stuff you used to do in the room. Can we just throw it up online? And I was going, yeah, I have the capability to throw it up online. This is the opportunity to throw it up online. You know what? I don't want to throw it up online. It was such a moment for me. I loved it. And also to add to your point about being in the moment, speaking of moments, I think this sounds like such an aging hippy-dippy thing to say, but my yoga practice so helped with that. Because in yoga, in real yoga, you learn to be constantly in the moment. To really listen to your own body, to your own breath. And that really helped me to get better at my facilitation job. I got so much more calm inside. And it's one of the wonderful things that our mutual friend Chip has done at Modern Elder Academy is that he and his team have paid so much attention to environment.
Yeah.
That it is very hard not to be in the moment. It's all so beautiful. Everything you eat tastes beautiful. Everything you look at looks beautiful. The air on your skin feels so warm and soft. The sound of the ocean. Everything is beautiful, and that brings us into the moment. And I think it's, you know, it's a genius thing to do for presence, is to set yourself in a beautiful place.
When I went to Modern Elder for the first time, Chip asked me to be there in two hats on, one as a full participant and one as a experienced coach and program designer, to say, what do you think? And my feedback at the end, he was expecting, I think, loads and loads of notes. And I said two words: do less. Now, just to explain that for people, what you're saying, their environment's incredible. They already put in far less content than you get in a typical week-long program because the wisdom is in the room. That's one of the key things. And so it goes back to the thing about editing to be more concise and simplicity being the ultimate sophistication. And so the only thing was, however much you feel you're already pared it back, do less.
Exactly. I'm going to blow my own trumpet a bit here, but I recently wrote a blog called Be More Cell, Be More Cell, Less Balloon. And I came back to my biochemistry training. Now, a cell takes in things across its membrane, but also lets things out again. And there are two mechanisms for that. There's passive, so things come in because there's a lower concentration on the inside than the outside. There's also active, so some things are actively helped into the cell and actively helped out of the cell. And I have found that something that's been a real disease during this lockdown time has been that people have been letting too much stuff in, bringing too much stuff in. And they're beginning to explode. They're behaving like a balloon and not like a cell. And what I'm trying to do for myself is to stop taking so much stuff in and be quite clear and active about what I want to let out. And it's, for me, been a great opportunity to clean out my interests cupboard and clean out my people cupboard a bit, actually. I'm going, what of my interests is actively helping me here? And which of my friends and acquaintances are actively helping me here? They can continue to come in. Some other things, I'm going to let them go.
Well, I'm honored to have your presence for 30 minutes.
You made it onto the list.
Made the latest cut and may not make a future edit. Who knows? So we've been gloriously off topic for 25 minutes. So, and not, because as Rob pointed out to me, what comes next is an improv game. When we spoke a few weeks ago, and it can be about what comes next, the next phase. How can we as leaders, individuals address that? But it could be even bigger. You know, we've got a real reshaping of what's happening. But, just for a few minutes, maybe what are your thoughts on what comes next at any level?
I think really it is the Cell and Berlin thing for me, that this could be an opportunity for us to be much more mindful about what we let into our lives and what we let go. And I'm reading a paper at the moment, which is called From Embodied Cognition to Free Will. And this is what I hope will come next, that we start to understand our own real feelings and act from there, mm-hmm. instead of acting from what we're told we should think, what we're told we should want, to actually really sitting with it and asking, well, what do I really want and need right now? Mm. And then very carefully going, and how do I get that thing and not be distracted by the millions of other things that are coming at us? So I'm going, yes, let's be more Cell. Let us embody what we really know and then act with it, so that we don't, if I come back to, you know, the moral injury, there won't be such moral injury because we will know what it is that is true to us.
And that's brilliant. It also comes back to the reflection I was having around the gentleman, Josh Waitzkin, around less external noise, more internal music. It's, I'm still wrestling with this. I'm 3 years into moving to London, and I consciously recognize that I'm always telling senior leaders to do, the less they do, the more valuable they are to their business. Yeah. And, but I see them rushed and harried and rescheduling calls and arriving for a 3 hour meeting with me to go for a quiet walk, having just done 10 hours of, you know, whatever, loads of work to another time zone. And I thought, well, I need to be in a different frame. If I'm going to be telling them to do this, I need to walk this particular talk and I need to do less. So my life has been all about paring back, for several years now. Mm-hmm. So that when I show up to a client, they're saying, you know, I've just had 2 hours chilling out. I might have done yoga. I might have just read a book or something. I haven't just tried to clear 50 emails before I walk in the door to see them like I used to do years ago. And with all of that, it's still a journey, right? Because there are moments in which I'm going, people got that lovely London question, are you busy? As if it's a badge of honor. And I go, and I make a joke. I'll proudly go, actually, no, I'm active. You know, I fill my time. But part of me in the background, the little voice goes, you should be doing more work. Mm-hmm. But actually the work I do with the clients I do is because I spend at least 2/3 of my time not working.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that. Are you busy? I'm active. You know, yeah. I fill my days. I get up, I go for a run, I do some yoga. If there's a bit of work to do, I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm active all day long, but not necessarily busy.
No. Yeah. Anyway. Well, that's a gloriously minimalist episode of the show with a couple, with a bit of K-A-Y-OS at the beginning. You've just injected K-OS.
You're welcome.
In fact, there is, in the Cayman Islands, there is an area called Cayman Kai, K-A-I, and it's full of people who've built like winter cottages and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite ones there has a sign outside saying not for sale, because there's so many for sale real estate signs there being marketed. But there's another one, the house is actually called Chaos. So this was a gloriously chaotic show. And also very, very rich in conversation. And I've noticed this with, as you say, some mutual friends of ours like Rob and Steve, is that when we work as facilitators and coaches and people see the output of what we do, but they'd have, probably have no idea the kind of conversations we have. So this is a little bit of all these conversations I've had with each of you, a little bit of an insight, a fly on the wall onto, so what do these people do when they're not actually at the front of a room facilitating or actually coaching a leader? You know, it's like, well, they kind of talk about stuff. He says nearly swearing on the show.
We talk about rats and chaos.
Rats and chaos and joy and being more cell, less balloon.
Thank you.
I will technically try to end the stream and finish the show. And thank you very much, my dear friend.
Thank you, Tom.